Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, for many, many times, has been brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is still your full-service rare coin, precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. Buying and selling all forms of rare coins and precious metals and scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. Specializing in building portfolios, helping you save and preserve your capital for the long haul. We have a pretty good reputation, I think, over the long haul for taking pretty good care of people. And that's what we're in the business of doing. So for the area, I think we offer a pretty good service. I think even on a national level, we're pretty serious. We like good material. We like, we've been around. We know how to do it. I think we're pretty good. Christian owned and operated is an important part of who we are. That's definitely a feature of our business. It's kind of the foundation of our business. So today, I think I'm going to call it kind of Free for All Friday. I don't have much of a topic, so I think I'll just kind of go through and make stuff up. It's due to time, but I've got piles of stuff around my recording area. I'll just start grabbing things and looking through some interesting stuff. One thing that pops into my mind is this. I don't know if how close most of you watch the news, but this sexual harassment, sexual sensitivity society that we're in, it blows my mind. Okay, and I'll tell you why. So we've got Al Franken, who's a Democratic senator, kook. Total nutbag. Of course, he was a Saturday Night Live comedian, and that's what he does. He's a comedian. Okay, I mean, he had a few skits that are funny, but he's not a likable person. He's kind of a heartless, wretched man. But he was doing a skit one time, or doing on a movie set or something with somebody, and they were with a gal, and they were flying in military craft, and apparently she fell asleep. And so he mock-groped her, I would say. That's what the conservatives are mocking the liberals, who are calling it mock-groping. But to me, it looks like mock-groping. She's wearing like a full flak jacket, full military, material and all this stuff, and he puts his hands over kind of by her breasts and makes a crazy face to the camera. Which is kind of what I would expect out of the guy, because he's a raunchy comedian. Okay, so now all of a sudden this stuff comes out, and that was like back in, I don't know when, 2006, and now we're in 2017. Then we've got Roy Moore, the guy running for the Senate from Alabama in a special election. He's got women accusing him from 40 years ago of being whatever, rough on teenage girls when he was 30. Apparently, he wasn't very nice to teenage girls. I don't know the whole gist of it, but what I do know is there's a girl that said that he touched her inappropriately 40 years ago through her clothing, not unclothed. And then all of a sudden her story's falling apart, because supposedly he signed her yearbook. It's not his handwriting. Gloria Allred, who's the most wretched, when she shows up on the scene, man, I'm telling you, she's like this total Hollywood scuzzbag attorney that just chases money. She's the most raunchy. She's terrible. She's just a huge showman. So she shows up, and Roy Moore, the guy running for senator's camp, is like, "That's not my handwriting, Let's prove it." And then, of course, Gloria Allred says, "Well, you can have a copy of the yearbook when you submit to questioning on all five of your accusers." Well, that's not right. You're one accuser, and you're saying he signed a yearbook, and they're saying that's not my writing. That's not, it says DA. Well, he was the deputy district attorney, he said at the time. And then what's crazy is when the lady came out to accuse him, she's with Gloria Allred. It's been 40 years, right? and she's telling the story and she's crying and carrying on. And it's so sensitive. And then we find out that 20 years earlier, Judge Roy Moore presided over her divorce hearing. So 20 years earlier, she apparently had no problem going into this guy's courtroom for her divorce. No problem at all. So she wasn't crying then. So you get all this stuff. What's going on, folks, is it reminds me so much of Timothy, where it says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. I think what we've got, when we develop self-righteousness outside of God's righteousness, it is a very shaky ground, okay? If you look at what man does to man throughout history, I mean, it's bad. And when we create our own sets of rules to abide by, and I'll even say in the name of religion, there's been some wretched things done. I mean, man treats man harsh. People get vendettas. People get mean. People let hate crawl up within them, and they get hate built up to the point of wanting to kill. And that's what politics does for a lot of people. And that's what politics does for young people. They just get everything caught up into it. They think it's everything. They think the world's coming to an end. And so what happens is we start to get this liberal agenda, this crazy left-wing, radical, socialistic, tree-hugging, nutcase, you know, left-wing, progressive, fruitcake, whatever you want to call it, going, and they become venomous. They become vitriolic. They become, you know, it's ridiculous how hardcore the hatred and anger becomes and the desire to destroy and the double standards. No two cases are alike. They're like, well, you know, so I mean, I don't know how deep to get into this. But I mean, so all of a sudden now they got Trump's name in it because Trump said, well, that's really inappropriate, okay, about what's his name, Al Franken, who, by the way, admitted fault. Roy Moore's denying fault. Trump denied fault. When the Access Hollywood tapes came out about Trump, where he said, yeah, when you're really famous, girls really like you, and you can pretty much do whatever you want to him, he said, okay? Now, that's completely inappropriate. It's bad. It's evil and all that. But, I mean, there's reality, and then there's, you know, whatever. And the fact of the matter is, there's ideology is the other one I meant. But the fact of the matter is, Trump's not a believer, and or wasn't. He is now, I believe. He's surrounded by believers in the office. He's got Bible study every Thursday. If you remember, the left went off about that. How dare you read a Bible in the White House? That is separation of church and state. I'm like, what is wrong with these people? And then those Bible studies are very impressive, by the way. They've got some pretty powerful people coming to them. I'm like, that'd be a good Bible study to join. How do I get in that one? The vice president. By the way, here I go. Now down one of my tangent trails. So I mentioned on the show, like, a couple of years ago for a special trip, I don't remember what it was, birthdays, anniversaries with my wife and I, we went to an island called Ticharoa in 30 miles north of Tahiti. And we stayed at a place called the Brando, which was heaven on earth, you know, 3-star Michelin chef cooking, and you get your own private villa in an absolute Shangri-La sanctuary lagoon and beyond over the top, ridiculously perfection. I'll put it that way. Phenomenal. Big bucks. And while we were there, they just opened up in 14. I think we were there in 16, and they were, you know, things were kind of taking off and they're advertising and it's expensive. And for a few days, maybe 3 or 4 days, all the people on the island, the only clients on the island was myself, not myself, my wife and I, and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. And we met him a few times, had some words, you know. And I got invited to more stuff, and I never went, which was really dumb because we could have went to his house and spent more time. But now I find out today he's becoming the king of Saudi Arabia. So I thought that was pretty cool. I actually met the king of Saudi Arabia, and I should have seriously made a little bit more out of it, but I didn't. So I don't have any. I can't just pick up the phone and stay in the palace in Saudi Arabia. I guess that's too bad. So I just thought I'd share that. But I thought that was pretty cool. He was there on his six-month honeymoon as he went around the world to the most famous, phenomenal, incredible places. He had his own, of course, his own private helicopter. And, of course, he had his own security detail with him that would watch you very closely when you came to talk to him or whatever, or when you walked by his villa. He, you know, you'd get special eyes for you where they would watch you. And once they became comfortable with my wife and I think they were kind of like, whatever, we're not too worried about it. But it's, I just thought that's kind of interesting. So anyhow, back to where we were on this lovely topic. So I guess we can keep going, but here, you know, it boils down to this. We have in 1 Timothy 3, and I've gone here before, and I'm sorry, but Scripture does that to you. It talks about the end times. Men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Then on top of this, okay, so God, I mean, this is God's word, and Timothy is the one that told us that all, you know, all scriptures God breathed, God inspired. That's from Timothy, right? So after that, he says, so what's he telling us? At the end, he's like, dude, you're not even going to believe this stuff. People become just wretched, heinous, vile, self-centered, you know, rotten, self-consuming, murderous, angry, you know, immoral. And then he says this, holding to a form of godliness, what? Although they have denied its power, avoid such men as these. Now, here's what he's saying. People are, as they become unrighteous and unholy, there is a certain emotion that gets involved with sin, right? It's called judgmentalism. With their judgmentalism, they get a sense of holiness that is destructive. You ever wonder, you know, when these nations just kill, you know, Stalin, 60 million people. What was Mao Zedong? 100 million people. 100 million people. And then you go down the list. How do they do that? How they do that, folks, is they become self-righteous. They eat up the power. They love the power. And it happens at everybody. You know, you hear the thing, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. That is so true. If you give one person power over another, if you even go back into the dark ages and in the terrible things that they did to people, you know, the witch trials and, you know, they'd have people drawn and quartered and disemboweled and, you know, way beyond that. Why? How? Righteousness. I'm better than you. You're up there. I'm down here. You did bad. I did good. This is why people love the news. It's they sit there and they go, they're worse than I am. They're worse than I am. I'm better than them. I'm better than them. And folks, you got to be so careful about getting that spirit. You cannot get that spirit. That same spirit can infiltrate you and the church that having a form of godliness, you know, develop these cultural, self-righteous, you know, uppity kind of personality things, where you become exclusive or exclusionary. Certain people in the church don't get treated properly, or, boy, you just don't pray like I do. I am such a prayer warrior, and you just don't understand. And I've seen it all. I've seen it. And that is not God's heart. By the way, folks, I'll tell you, I mean, I guess I didn't have much to say today, so I got to watch myself. I'm traveling all over the place right now. something that's very interesting. We have, you know, I've talked lately about the parable of talents, okay? And we have a lot of accountability. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about the way a child is raised. You know, raise a child in the way he should go, and he shall not depart from it, and spare the rod, spoil the child, and all that stuff. True. But what's interesting is, you know, I know people, a couple in particular, multiple couples, but a couple couples, how about that, who've adopted children right out of the womb into their family from really rough backgrounds. One guy I know real well who adopted two of them, and the kids are now in their upper 20s. Both of the kids were just hellions. And these people are the most simple, mild-mannered, Seventh-day Adventist Christians you can ever meet. Okay? And these kids just went off the deep end. So I was talking to him about it, and he's like, genetics, Kevin, genetics. It's genetics, I guarantee you. And he was telling me a story. He's like, you know, we knew this kid's mother. He never did. He said his mother had an obsession with knives and sharp objects type thing, big knives, big machetes, whatever. And he said from the time this kid was little, he was obsessed with them. And then I, this other friend of mine who adopted twins from a meth addicted prostitute, they didn't know that's what it was coming from when they got them, I don't think. But anyway, those kids from the birth just tore their family's house apart, just put those people through utter misery nonstop. Couldn't stop them, straight out of the womb. So here's interesting. You guys have probably all heard of that. Oh, I can't remember, maybe like Kubler or whatever it was, that twin study, that long-term twin study, where they, I'm going to get it up here. Okay, so Tyler Robbins, I think it was, I don't know. But anyway, identical twins, let me see if I can, sorry, I warned you that I didn't have everything ready to go. So anyway, there's a long-term identical twin study over a period of 40 years. They tracked these twins, not these twins. They tracked all identical twins that were separated at birth in America. And then they went and saw them later, like 20 years later, 25 years later in their life, separated at birth or very young, orphanages, things like that, given up for adoption, whatever. People would want one baby. One thing that's sad is, at least at the time when I was reading this, they had a policy that if a mother wanted a child, okay, they would not tell the adoptive mother that this child was one of twins, which is terrible. So they'd tear these twins apart, and they'd send one way and one another, and they'd never tell the adoptive parents that they had a twin sibling, identical twin. I think that's messed up. I personally do. I think when God does the twin thing, he's showing off, isn't he? Hey, look at the genetics. Both landed on the same card. Isn't that neat? Whatever. Plus, they, you know, those twins develop that bond starting in the womb. Twins are generally very secure. Identical twins, the suicide rate among identical twins, members of an identical twin, is like 1/80th, I think. It's one, I was reading it here just the other day. It's like 1 out of 80 less likely than normal kids, which means that they just don't. And so they track these twins down, hundreds of them throughout the United States. And guess what? These twins that they're tracking down that were separated at birth all over the United States, these groups of twins that they're studying, they have such similarities, it's mind-numbing. Literally, they'll have the same clothes on. They'll be working at the same job, listening to and loving the same music, driving the same car. They'll marry the same kind of guy. They'll have the same hairstyle. This is true. So there's a genetic disposition put into each one of us. Like I've said, you have a destiny. You have the fingerprint of God on you, in you, every day. You're born with it. We are not born blind, you know, immigrants on the earth that God expects us to open our eyes and go, where am I? What do I do? What a mystery. Wow, I hope I can find income and food. No, he's like, you have a purpose. Each one of you has a specific purpose, a specific meaning that I've imprinted into you. And people are like, well, you know, it's the genetic lottery and, you know, you can't control any of this. And it's just, you're going to get what you're going to get. Hey, I'll tell you what, to a degree, it does appear to be the genetic lottery for the physical part, not your soul and your spirit, not the component of who you are, but the vessel that you shall dwell. The vessel that you dwell in may be associated with the parable of talents that he literally gives to each according to his ability. So how does he give to each according to their ability? Well, that must mean that he knows our spirit. And we can have a restless spirit. We can have a rebellious spirit. We can have a peaceful spirit. Now, that's interesting, too. So God creates a spirit that makes you who you are, and he puts it inside of a vessel on the earth. Now, each of our spirits have a different personality. We have, you know, in Peter, when he broke out of prison or jail and went back to the house where they were praying for him, the girl shut the door because she said she thought it was his ghost, the ghost of Peter. Well, the Bible's telling us right there, there is such a thing as us having our own ghost. What is that? I don't know. It's interesting, but it was sure there was no problem putting that in the Bible at the time. So obviously it was common knowledge then. There's a lot of things like that you can go look up culturally and knowledgeable, you know, when they brought Samuel up and, you know, there's all kinds of things from the dead. So I'm just telling you, there's a lot more to this world than what we know. And we know that we fight not against flesh and blood, but against the powers and, you know, the powers of darkness and the principalities and all that kind of stuff. We live in a spiritual realm. Our spirit may primarily exist in both realms and are in which, so we're visible to the devil in the spiritual realm through our spirit. Our body is maybe not so visible, but it's just interesting to consider that fact that your spirit had a specific personality from the time it was created by God. And then he gives to each according to their ability. So he knows what your spirit's going to conduct. And you can get into the thing about when is the spirit created? Where does the spirit come from? I don't know, folks. I mean, we know when the body's created at conception. Is that when the spirit's created and placed in it? But, you know, a lot of this stuff, you've got the genetic lottery perhaps on the biological portion of our body, which still doesn't make sense because when the sperm meets the egg, it is survival of the fittest. And I know that, you know, so the male sperm fights against how many? Hundreds of millions of other male sperm to basically fertilize the egg. It's in most cases, it's the best one that gets there first or, you know, the top 10, you know, so, and I know there's times that you look at people and you're like, you're the one that won, but that's probably what people think when they look at me. It's interesting to think in some cases, if you're like, well, if that one won, what else was in there? I don't know, you know, but God's in control of everything. God's in control of life. God's in control of it all. I mean, so we have to realize that, you know, there's the spirit placed in the body or the soul, whatever gets placed in the body. The body gets, you know, birthed from a specific location, which I believe God's in control of. And then God places you where you are. And one of the big sayings my mom used to say is bloom where you're planted. Don't always be looking over the fence for something different, something better, something more glorious and grand. Just excel at what he gave you. Take responsibility. There's a book called Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. The guy's a Navy SEAL commander. And he tells a story in Iraq where the Navy SEALs messed up bad and they got caught up in friendly fire where they were shooting at each other, but not on purpose. It just was bad logistics. And afterwards, you know, the story went all the way up the chain. Immediately, they were told to cease and desist all operations, to shut down completely. And then they sat and waited for the general to fly in. And you can imagine what they're sitting there thinking. They're like, we've shot our own men. We've killed one of our own guys. Because we dropped the ball. We screwed up. We didn't plan properly. Maybe we got cocky. Maybe whatever. Maybe we didn't try hard enough. You know, whatever. So then when this general shows up and sits down and colonels and everything saying, what in God's earth is going on here? And you think about it, it's pretty serious when the elite of the elite of the elite get caught up in friendly fire. Okay? So Jocko Willink, who was the commander, went around the room and said, whose fault is this? And immediately, a Navy SEAL raised his hand and said, sir, it's my fault. You know, and he said, I didn't properly secure the area, or I didn't, you know, another guy. And then he says, no, that's wrong. It's not your fault. Whose fault is it? And another guy raised his hand, sir, it's my fault. You know, I didn't properly detain this, or I didn't properly announce this information or alert people or whatever. And he said, no, you're wrong. It's not your fault. Whose fault is it? And they went around the room and did this. A number of guys, all these Navy SEALs, were fighting to take responsibility for the biggest mess in the Navy SEALs in a long time, for the loss of a friend. Okay, these guys are fighting each other, literally, professionally, but they're scrambling to take responsibility. These are men, and Jocko Willink says, no, you're wrong. And after this goes on enough, he says, look, it's not your fault or your fault or your fault. It's my fault. I'm your commander. I'm in charge. And it's my fault that this blew up. And, you know, I can't properly pass the responsibility down. That's leadership. And folks, I'm just saying, we've got to have that attitude in our lives. Take responsibility. I had a guy here working for a very short period of time who had a very, very checkered past, and charity hires are tough. But, I mean, the finger pointing was so intense and so destructive that literally I asked him, hey, can you turn, you know, restart your computer every night? It's good for, you know, our backup. It's how our backup works. Instead of going, sure, it's screaming about who told him to do what. And I said, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Just restart it. No, I was just doing what I was told. It just goes on and on and on like this. And you're like, are you serious? You know, and it won't stop. And I'm like, dude, restart your computer. You know, but this is a mentality that we get into of extreme defensiveness. And that is such a destructive spirit. I mean, when we, as I've, you know, not kept secret, I love Proverbs. And Proverbs speaks so repeatedly, I guess, about just taking complete and total responsibility. Because what can you make a difference with? I mean, you know, they've got the Serenity Prayer that they say in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. How much time do we spend worrying and hustling and scurrying to change things we can't change? How much energy do we put into things we have absolutely no impact on? And that's a waste. How much time do we spend griping and complaining about things like that? We should not do that. It says, you know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. So it doesn't just mean ignore them. It's accept them. Accept that that's out of your control. And then to change the things you can. Well, guess what the things you can change are? You. Period. You. That's really what it boils down to. You know, Michael Jackson, you know, the man in the mirror. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. You know, the song about change. It's a beautiful song. I love it. It starts with us. We can change us. And that's why we have to bathe ourselves, saturate ourselves in the Word of God. What's so crazy is what an impact the Bible has had on our globe, and yet how little we know about it, how little time we read it personally. And yet it is every reason that this nation exists today, because there was an era of men who read and read and read. Now, what do we got? You know, I had a deal yesterday or the day before where I got connected with a really impressive car guy. I'm into cars, a car guy out of Miami, and a friend of mine who's into a certain type of cars. I said, hey, I met so-and-so, and his son runs this other huge website company. And he's like, oh, really? Yeah, you know, And we were talking about all this, and the guy I was talking to here was, you know, talking about all of his cars and what he's doing with them and his brothers. He's got two brothers that are really into cars. And I said, well, how many brothers you got? He goes, three. And he said, my two other brothers are really into cars, and we're doing this. And they're all probably, you know, in their 27 to 30 range. And he goes, but my younger brother, he doesn't do anything. He just sits around and plays video games and texts all day. And I'm like, really? How old is he? He goes, well, he was born kind of late. He was kind of unexpected. And, you know, he's in his teens or whatever. And I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, it's sad. He goes, this whole society, this is what they're telling the kids it's okay to do. This is what every kid does. There's no kids that are into much of anything other than computer junk, just sitting around, wasting away, ruining their mind, not learning any social skills at all. And, you know, I mean, it's scary, folks. These people are coming up to run our country, and they're getting a whole skewed perspective of morality and reality. And, you know, our schools, we're getting more and more schools that are starting to implement online learning, which technically, if it's done properly, there's some great Christian resources out there for online learning. If you want to do that with your kids for various reasons, I would not discourage it. But I will tell you that, you know, some online learning is good, some isn't, just like everything else. But what do we do with this next generation, honestly? I mean, how many of these kids are going to come out with skills, the social skills? I mean, it's scary stuff. It's very, very scary stuff. You know, the Bible is full of personal responsibility. You know, you can go through, and it's so about us. You know, I went to Proverbs 17 because today the 17th. A servant, I'm just reading verses, no reason. A servant who acts wisely will rule over a son who acts shamefully and will share in the inheritance among brothers. Okay, I mean, you can go through this stuff. I did not intend to read this verse for any other reason, but the servant who what? Acts wisely, takes personal responsibility to make himself a good person. He makes good decisions. He will what? Rule over a son who acts shamefully, who doesn't take responsibility for his life. The Bible, you can just see this over and over and over and over. The refining pot is for silver and the furnace is for gold, but the Lord tests hearts. God tests us from the inside. What I was getting at earlier when I was talking about all the apparent randomness of the parable of talents and how you're formed and who you are, the point of that is that you are unique. You cannot judge another man based on your standards. Now, if each of us, if this Roberts twin study showed that you take two twins and separate them and put one in California and one in New York, and they grow up and they have 90% similarity in their decision making and the outcome of their life, What does that tell you? That tells me that we are very unique. And when God says he judges a man by his heart, we judge a man by their outward appearance, their outward performance. Not only that, we give man a special break if they are given a lot of God-given talent on the outside, don't we? You know, big superstar football players, incredible singers. And then you'll meet people that are phenomenally talented and humble. And, you know, I mentioned at the end of a show, I hope some of you got to go see Garth Brooks. That was incredible. And I had someone make a comment to me or an email or something about it's not Christian music. It's like, folks, come on, give me a break. I grew up in Montana on country music, and I'll tell you what, there is God all over that stuff. Sure, there's also broken trucks and dead dogs and divorced wives. Don't get me wrong. But the point is, these guys, you know, Garth Brooks, the whole concert, he's pointing up, giving the glory to God, moving it up. And each one of us has to work out our own salvation. The Bible says that. That each one of us has to work out our own salvation. And people look at that and they say, well, that's easy. You just pray, receive Christ, you're saved. It's all good. Go back to work. Everything's great, right? Good. No. Each one of us, God puts us on this intricate journey. Each one of us has a different thought process. We have different tendencies. We have different temptations. We have different struggles. Some of the things we see people struggle with that are heinous, maybe that stuff's just something in their flesh, or in most cases, it's learned. I had a good friend who was molested by his father, and ultimately over time, he was so fear-ridden, it created extreme cowardice, and he ended up basically ruining a phenomenal career because he could not do the right thing. He just could not just do good. He ran from everything. You can only run and hide from so many things. You've got to face your problems. You've got to run to your problems. I learned that early on in a business world with a regional manager in a bank corp I worked for. That was his saying, run to your problems. You know, Mark Twain said, if you eat a live frog every morning, you know that nothing worse will happen to you throughout the day. The point is, run to your problems. If you've got stuff that's bugging you, run to it. If you've got projects to do or budget issues, sit down, get an Excel spreadsheet, go online, whatever you have to do, get a budget and lay it out. I can't tell you the number of people I've talked to that are struggling financially, and when I start to ask them, what are you doing here? What are you doing there? They don't know. They can't tell me. How much do you owe on this bill? I don't know. What interest rate is it? I don't know. I don't want to think about it. I just can't. There's no way I can pay all these bills. Well, you know what? It doesn't change the fact that we got to look at them and try to figure it out. Okay, folks, so back to that responsibility. This is what makes God happy. I can tell you, when you take pure responsibility and you go through the refinement, the refining source, as it says up here, you know, the refining pot is for silver and the furnace is for gold, but the Lord tests the hearts. So God uses this stuff. He tests our hearts by refining us. Interesting, he uses gold and silver there too, isn't it? But he tests our hearts by refining us. Folks, you will not, if you are a believer and your life is just perfect in the world sense, and you have no struggles, no troubles, everything's fine, you do the same thing every single day and you're not going through any challenges, you had better get on your knees and say, Lord, what have I done to separate us, to separate myself from your love? Because the Bible is crystal clear that God disciplines those he loves. He is crystal clear about that. If he loves you, he disciplines you. Now, when we read the word discipline, we are like, wow, you know, Proverbs 3:11, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. Reproof is correction or, yeah, it's correction. And then in, you know, Psalms, it says, for you hate discipline and you cast my words behind you. That's God speaking. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. That's a Bible verse, 12:1, Proverbs. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge. You want knowledge? You want to be wise? By the way, folks, every one of you should want to be wise. What drives me nuts is to meet somebody who has absolutely no desire for wisdom. God, in his word, tells us over and over again in Proverbs, he says, wisdom is everything, he says. He says, you sell everything and get wisdom. And I have met people, they don't care. They just want to be a rockhead. I don't care how smart you are. I don't care what grade you went through school. Wisdom is available to you. A wise man realizes when he doesn't have it. A fool thinks he has it. You talk about the fool. A fool rejects his father's what? Discipline. But he who regards reproof is sensible. He who neglects discipline despises himself, but he who listens to reproof acquires understanding. Understanding is a fountain of life to one who has it, but the discipline of fools is folly. It's saying, okay, discipline's good stuff, but the discipline of fools is foolishness. So if you're the one that says that doesn't care about wisdom, that's your discipline. You're just a fool. You know, that's where you end up at. Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire what? His death and destruction. Proverbs 19:18. You'll ruin kids if you don't discipline them. I can go on like this. I'm sure you get the point. You know, but the fact of the matter is, the word for discipline is the same word for training military people in their skill. God is making us spiritual warriors through discipline. And we have got to embrace that. So what I was saying a minute ago, if your life is perfect, and not perfect, but if it's pretty much eventless, you need to ask God why. God should be working in your life. If you walk up to somebody and say, hey, how's God working in your life? And they look at you and they don't know, then they're either not seeking God or God's not seeking them, and either way, I would consider to be quite a problem, and I'm sure you'd probably agree. So we should always know where and how God's working in our life. That is very important. And I'm not saying it's always going to be, you know, peaches and cream and all that at all, but to know what's going on is important. I mean, that's what our walk is about. For God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline. That's 2 Timothy. What is that? 2 Timothy 2. 2 Timothy 1, 7. For God has not given us a spirit of timidity. What does that mean? Let's kick out a little Greek here. Find out what that means. For God hasn't given us a spirit of timidity is the word dalia, looks like. Dalia, yeah. It means God has not given us a spirit of fearfulness or cowardice, okay? And cowardice needs to be called what it is. If someone's a coward, they are a coward. I mean, fear, being controlled by fear is cowardice. Overcoming your fear is courage, okay? And God expects us to be courageous, not cowardice. When you are gripped by fear, you are being a coward. So you have to shed that fear and overcome it. I don't completely understand people who can't. I'll admit it, okay? I can understand a lot of things, but I just do not understand cowardice. I don't get it, because all you have to do is try. If your fear of failure is so strong that it somehow grips you and stops you, get help, if you think about it, because there, you know, is a spiritual chain of bondage on you that is pulling you back. And I mentioned the friend of mine. It's just a bummer to see. I'm not getting into the details, but to just see where cowardice just destroyed an amazing, you know, life in a way. I mean, an incredible career opportunities and things like that. And it's just sad. But the other thing is, so he said, God didn't give us a spirit of cowardice, but of power. Now, the word that God said he gave us a spirit of power, dynamis, right? Or maybe it's pronounced dynamis, dynamite, explosiveness, dynamic, right? This is what God gave us a spirit of. God gave us a spirit of dynamism. What does that word in Greek mean? Dynamis. This is the spirit that he gave us. It means power, mighty works, strength, miracles, might, virtue, mighty ability, inherent power, power residing in a thing by virtue of its very nature, or which a person or thing exerts and puts forth. The power for performing miracles, it means. Moral power and excellence of soul. This is all the definition of the Greek word for dynamis. This is the spirit that God says he gave you. The power and influence which belongs to riches and wealth. The power and resources arising from numbers. Power consisting in or resting upon armies, forces, and hosts. So God has given us the power to command his holy army, his angels. All we have to do is ask God for it. He will send out his angels. He will send out his spiritual army for us. This is interesting. How about the power and influence which belongs to riches and wealth? So folks, I'm not health and wealth at all. But isn't that neat to see that it's okay with God if you have wealth? I had a guy call yesterday or the other day, and he had a bunch of stuff, and he was thinking of selling it, and he was talking about getting rid of it and not storing up treasures on earth and all that, which is good, very good. But on the other hand, what's going on is we've run into is this thing way back. There was a little booklet called The Treasure Principle that snuck into the church, and Christians were getting a hold of this. And what was happening is it's socialism. It's socialism in the church. And we start to get a guilt trip if we have anything financially worthy, worthwhile. We are getting, socialism has been embedded in our church for quite some time. God is not opposed to you enjoying your life. God is not opposed to you having material things. That's just dumb. He put us in a material world. It's not like we're dropped in this crazy place that we don't belong and we're not supposed to enjoy any of it. Why did Jesus Christ come? That we may have life and have it abundantly. The devil comes to what? Steal, kill, and destroy. He wants to steal. He wants to take everything away. What? Kill. And that, you know, he wants to kill and destroy everything God made. He wants to kill your spirit. He wants to kill your joy. He wants to kill your prosperity. He came to steal, kill, and destroy. He wants to destroy everything God made. God gave us this world filled with riches and resource. Riches and resource just don't belong just to governments. That is socialism. If man is supposed to be broken poor and all of the big heavy lifting, per se, is supposed to be done by a government, no way, man. That's not what God had intended. And you look at our founding fathers, they figured that out. The heavy lifting is done by us. The amazing works are done by us. The incredible accomplishments are done by us. Our founding fathers were phenomenal entrepreneurs. They were very well-to-do. At Mount Vernon, George Washington had thousands of acres. The entire property was a business. And you think, well, they needed to do that back then to do, make a living. No, they didn't. They could work for other people and be poor or whatever. But I'm talking, this man was trading per year $2.5 million a year in fish with Great Britain. You know what that is today? You wouldn't even believe me if I told you how much that was. He had two and a half million fish a year he was trading. The dollar amount of that was probably $1 million, I suppose. I don't know. But some of the research I did said that. But by today's standards, that's a lot of money. 2.5 million fish. You figure you get X amount per pound, and you do the math. It's crazy. And he had even a whiskey distillery on his property. So everything in moderation, folks. Jefferson was an incredible businessman. Of course, people say he died bankrupt. He didn't. He didn't have a lot of money, but he had a lot of land. What did he have, 32,000 acres or something like that? So I'm just telling you, I am not the health and wealth preacher. And the reason I'm not the health and wealth is you don't tell God what you're doing when. But what I will tell you is God does want you to be prosperous. He wants you to be healthy. He wants you to be happy. Now, he wants you to be happy and glorify him. He wants you to serve him. But you can't, he does say he gives us beauty for ashes. And there's so much beautiful scripture of how God restores and heals and rejuvenates and does incredible things. And so many times we pray, we need $350 for something, and we pray and pray and pray. Like, God, that's going to be really hard for you to come up with $350. I mean, we can say that he owns the cattle on all the hills and all that, and we're trying to, pump ourselves up and jack ourselves up. But that's not true. God truly does. It's all his. He truly wants us to do incredible things. He doesn't just hand us stuff. He always has us involved. You look at churches that build magnificent facilities, and, there's all the work, energy, and effort, and time to create. God likes that. He enjoys that. God's way is not the lottery. God's, wealth soon received or whatever is, wealth quickly received is soon lost, or a fool and his money are soon departed. These are all Proverbs. We do a lot better when we earn things over time through discipline and self-control. I mean, we just really do. It's a fact. And so when we expect God, the way I want you to answer this prayer is to just break it out. Just rain cash on me. He won't do it. That's not his method. He can do it, but that's just not his method. When you're humble, I mean, we can't tell him what he can or can't do, right? But I hope you understand where I'm going. I started out with the holding to a form of godliness, and we've got this sexually righteous mess going on in our society. Watch out for that, folks. It is the onslaught of the overcoming of feminism. I'm not saying that any sexual harassment's okay, but you got to watch, because it gets to the point where they can cry wolf anytime, anywhere, and there's no evidence, and they can effectually destroy a man's life falsely, too. So I don't know. I think we need to be a little more scrutinizing. The 24/7 news cycle is so destructive. And, folks, I always fail to do a good job of this. We have a lot of stuff in stock. I've been doing this 20 years plus. I hand select a lot of material for people's investment portfolios. I'm going to be candid with you. We've had some turnover lately, and I'm a little behind. But we're trying to find the time to go through stuff and get my inventory under control. It's the opposite of what anybody would think. It takes a week or something to put a package to a sizable, $100,000 package together. But the fact of the matter is, we've got millions of dollars of inventory. It's just scattered in chaos. But I would encourage you to preserve and protect your finances. We are, I didn't even get to the Trump tax cut. Ouch. I mean, I'm very disappointed in that. It really does. I mean, it really gives a huge break to big corporations, the C-Corps. And the theory is it'll provide more jobs. You know what? Build in a tax incentive for them to provide jobs. Don't just give them a huge cut. The problem is the rest of society, the lower end, the poor, they got a nice tax break, a real nice tax break. The middle and upper middle class, as you move into the upper middle class where I kind of fit, it's pretty bad. I mean, it's in some cases, in our case, we actually will pay more taxes. Ouch. That's not good. I'm really unhappy with the tax plan because it's not a complete supply side belief. You either are all supply side or not. Our founders said no direct taxation, period. That means no income tax, do consumption taxes. Trump doesn't know any of this. He's very populist, socialist in his nature. The Dems are always going to scream it's for the rich anyway. That's what they do. So, folks, I don't know. I don't see. I think it'll stimulate corporate growth. But as far as the rest of us, I don't know. But I do know that God gave us a great, simple system for investing and saving. This is what we will help you do. Let us help you out. We wholesale to the public. We're not, there's no retail. There's no consignment or, commissions to people or anything like that. We will take good care of you the same as we would a relative or anything like that. I believe in what we do. I believe in the timing right now. It's wonderful. I really sincerely do. I just want to encourage you. Savings, 401ks, IRAs. We haven't seen as many 401ks and IRAs coming through. I don't know why that is. Don't get caught up in the overhype of the market. When it takes a tank, it's fast. You know, take your money and run while you can. When everybody else starts, you get big market slides. So be wise. Let us help you out. Bring in whatever you got. Sample it. Try it out. You know, just give us a taste. Thanks for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a really wonderful weekend. And sorry, I was a little more scattered than usual today. Well, take care. God bless. And we'll be back Monday. Bye-bye.